Hello and welcome to the AdMiat podcast, the official podcast of the International Parkinson and Movement Disorder Society. I am Michele Matarazzo, and today we have a fascinating discussion lined up about a new approach for treating cervical dystonia using MR-guided focused ultrasound pallidothalamic tractotomy. Our guest is Dr. Shiro Horisawa, a neurosurgeon from the Department of Neurosurgery of the Tokyo Women's Medical University in Japan, and the first author of a recently published pilot study on this topic. The title of the article is Focused Ultrasound Pallidothalamic Tractotomy in Cervical Dystonia, a Pilot Study, and it was published on the Movement Disorder Journal in January 2025. Shiro, welcome to the podcast.
Okay, thank you for having me on the MDS podcast. I'm really honored to be here today to discuss our recent work. Thank you.
Yeah, pleasure to have you.
Yeah.
So let's dive into the discussion. Let's start with some background. Cervical dystonia is a challenging condition to manage in many cases. Usually and traditionally, we rely on botulinum toxin therapy. In some cases, also with oral medication. And for severe cases, the brain stimulation is also an option. Could you give us an overview of the limitation of these existing options and why there was a need for exploring new approaches?
Yeah. Usually, botulinum toxin injections are the first-line treatment, even in Japan. But approximately 30% of the patients do not achieve a sufficient relief. For those who are refractory to botulinum injections, DBS is an effective alternative, but requires invasive surgery and device implantation and long-term device management. So the DBS is an already established surgery, and I do believe that DBS is the best surgery for cervical dystonia. But yeah, so many patients don't want to have the device. And for those food patients, the focused ultrasound is an emerging less invasive treatment modality that allows precise lesioning of the deep brain structures without skin incisions. So the patients don't want to have the device, but they want to treat their symptoms. And we can provide the lesioning surgery without implanted device. But the lesion is, in Japan, the lesioning surgery is a very popular surgery other than any other country. It's a very specific situation in Japan because our mentor, Dr. Professor Takami Taylor, started to do the lesioning surgery since 2000. And he have done so many cases. So the Japanese patients noticed that lesioning surgery is one of the treatment options in the movement disorder surgery. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit different situation in Japan.
Okay, so it's a mix of subjects who are not well suited for deep brain stimulation or don't want to undergo deep brain stimulation. And also that you, in your specific context, it's easier to do ablations because you have a long tradition.
Yeah.
And you've been discussing about ablations and lesioning for treatment of movement disorders. And that's been done for many years.
Yes.
But using focused ultrasound is something more novel, right? So you've been doing lesions with using other approaches before. Now, focused ultrasound has gained traction in treating essential tremor and Parkinson's disease, but its application in dystonia, it's still relatively new. What do you think makes this technique particularly promising for cervical dystonia specifically?
Yes, but in cervical dystonia, the deep bilateral GPA DBS provided, I think, 60%, generally 60% improvement. But the lesioning surgery, our previous report, bilateral pallidotomy GPI ablation achieved about 17% improvement of cervical dystonia or generalized dystonia. But bilateral lesion carries a very severe risk of dysarthria, dysphonia, and any other serious irreversible complications. But the unilateral lesion is quite safe. I haven't experienced any serious such kind of irreversible dysphonia, dysphagia, dysarthria complications due to the bilateral lesioning surgery. But unilateral lesion have a very big impact on the cervical dystonia with about 45% improvement. And the cervical dystonia is one of a very good candidate of the lesioning surgery. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Now, you mentioned this already while you were talking that you have treated the GPI, for example. You've treated other targets for dystonia. Now, this study focuses on focused ultrasound pallidothalamic tractotomy. why did you choose to target the pallidothalamic tract rather than, as you were mentioning, the more common globus pallidus pars interna or the thalamus? You've published already some thalamotomies with different targets within the thalamus for dystonia, or even the subthalamic nucleus has some evidence. Why do you specifically select the pallidothalamic tract?
Yes, the decision to target the pallidothalamic tract instead of the GPI was based on the several reasons. One is the historical evidence from Rolf Hassler's work in 1950 to 1970s. So actually, this PDT at the fields of Forel is not the new approach. The Hassler previously performed the lesioning of the PDT at the fields of Forel for cervical dystonia, but unilateral region for cervical dystonia. And the second reason is PDT belongs to the same circuit as GPI. So PDT is a fiber pathway connecting the GPI to the thalamus, meaning it is part of the same motor circuit. And additionally, our previous work lesioning the GPI with radial frequency for cervical dystonia achieved a 45% improvement of twist of the scale. And the lesioning as a PDT, as a physio forel, using the radio frequency ablation for cervical dystonia, achieved a 45% improvement of twister scale. So both procedures had a similar outcomes for cervical dystonia. That's supporting the efficacy of a PDT as a good target for cervical dystonia. And most importantly, the technical limitation of the GPI for focused ultrasound, that is a big problem. So GPI is located laterally 20 to 20 millimeter from the midline, so making it difficult to achieve sufficient temperature elevation with focused ultrasound. And the previous studies have shown that the focused ultrasound pallidotomy requires nearly twice the energy needed for a thalamotomy to reach effective temperature due to the GPI's lateral position and the scar absorption effects. So in focused ultrasound ablation, the closer the target is to the midline, the better the temperature elevation with focused ultrasound. The PDT is located only 6 to 10 millimeters from the midline, much closer than the thalamus, so making it much easier to achieve effective lesion compared to the GPI. So that's why we selected the PDT.
So those are all good points. So first you said that there is previous evidence with radio frequency, then that you also have compared your own experience with gamma knife and compare with GPI, and is similar, right?
No, we don't use a gamma knife. We use a radio frequency ablation.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and finally, you were also mentioning that there is a technical component to it, which is just that GPI is much more difficult to target with focused ultrasound. Great. Now, let's talk about your study results. You observed, as you were mentioning, more or less about a 43% improvement in the Toronto Western Spasmodic Torticollis Rating Scale at 6 months, which is quite encouraging. Could you walk us through the primary and secondary outcomes and how they compare to the existing treatment, like deep brain stimulation?
Yeah, our result at 6 months, the Twister Scale score improved by 43.4%. Indicating significant symptom reduction, but the problem was our outcome was very variable. Some patients achieved a 90% improvement. Some patients had a 20% improvement. That was one of our limitation in this study. Our secondary outcome is a BHMD-RLS neck score improved by 38.2, and the mood score, break depression inventory, big anxiety inventory, apathy evaluation scale, slowed. Showed a modest improvement, not so much. And the adverse events included a reduced hand dexterity in 4 patients, but 1 patient spontaneously improved, and the 3 patients persisted at the 6 month evaluation, and the 2 patients had weight gain, and the 10 kg or 15 kg with increased appetite. But this pilot study suggested the focused ultrasound PDT ablation may be effective and less invasive compared to the radio frequency ablation, because a focused ultrasound never happened basically an intracerebral hemorrhage or infection due to the surgery. But the problem is that we can provide unilateral region. So that's why our clinical outcomes was variable, because the cervical dystonia usually requires a bilateral surgery. So the unilateral surgery is not complete, not enough to control sometimes cervical dystonia. But One of my very interesting point in this clinical trial is that some patients are very happy to have only unilateral lesion with 90% or 80% improvement to Twistle's scale. For those patients, they don't need to have the bilateral surgery. I think that some of the patients are very happy to have the unilateral region surgery. They don't need the bilateral. For those patients, I think that they don't need the bilateral deep brain stimulation because the unilateral region in GPL or PDT, it's a very safe. And yeah, it's very promising.
Great. I think you raised some very interesting points. So I will go ahead with some follow-up questions on those. So you mentioned that there was a huge variability with some patients doing very well, but some other patient with lower response to the treatment. Do you have any hypotheses on what might predict a strong response versus a weaker response to this procedure? Could you predict which patient will be a better or worse responder based on, like, for example, neuroimaging or clinical features?
Yeah, unfortunately, I cannot answer that question. It's so difficult to answer. But in basically, the phasic movement dystonic head tremor or phasic movement type is a good indication of a good responder to the surgery, basically. And our champion case of 19% of the Twistle scale improvement of head shaking in case one in this paper is a dystonic head tremor. And she had almost complete resolution after the unilateral region. But that is a big problem. And if we could predict which patients would achieve optimal outcomes of unilateral regioning, we could better tailor the treatment and address this limitation. And to explore this, we are actively discussing with various researchers whether there are specific biomarkers or imaging-based predictors that could help identify the best candidate for unilateral treatment. That is our next challenge.
Great. Now, going back to the side effects, the reduced hand dexterity was actually a problem in a good amount of patients. Was it, I mean, obviously it's a side effect that you would like to avoid, but probably the question here is, was it severe enough to bother the patient as compared to the benefit that they had from the treatment, or it was just a mild hand dexterity problem?
Yeah, it's very mild hand dexterity problems that didn't interfere their daily activities. Mm-hmm. And they noticed their reduced hand dexterity when writing very quickly. They usually complained our writing became worse after the surgery. But other hand manual tasks that eating or typing, basically these daily activities is normal.
And do you think this is something inherent to the PTT, to the parathalamic tractotomy itself, or it's something that could be avoided with targeting improvement, for example?
Yeah, now I am tackling these problems with neuroimaging analysis, but I cannot find any good point to answer. But these similar hand dexterity problems happened in patients with GPI parathalamic patients and VO thalamotomy patients. I think these side effects may come from the side effects of the basal ganglia thalamus cortical circuit problem.
And another question with these new treatments, well, kind of new treatments, is the durability of the effect. Do you think the long-term durability is something that we should be worried about, or we could just assume that it's something similar to what we see in radiofrequency?
Yeah, my experiences, including the radiofrequency ablation, the movement disorder, I think 1,500 to 2,000 cases, and unilateral region for dystonia, peripheral spasm, or mouse dystonia, truncal dystonia, hand dystonia, any kind of these patients, basically, they have a very good long-term results, actually. It's not so common to recur after 6 months after the surgery. So within 6 months after the surgery is a very key duration, because sometimes after the surgery, the patients have a complete resolution of a head cervical dystonia, but recurred 1 week after the surgery, 1 month after the surgery, sometimes 2 months after the surgery, but never happened 6 months after the surgery or 1 year after the surgery. So if the patients can sustain the very good condition for 6 months or 1 year, that they can have a very good long-term results. Actually, in this clinical trial, and a lot of patients. First case, I think already 2 years passed, and she still had a 19% improvement.
Great. I think probably we still need to gather some more evidence, but it is true that if the lesioning procedure could be more or less, we can assume that it's similar to what we see with radio frequency, well, then we can be optimistic about this.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing you mentioned is the unilateral versus bilateral problem. And that's indeed has been a problem since we started with this new technique of acute ultrasound. But there are more and more studies doing bilateral procedures, staged bilateral procedure, in different brain targets. We know already that VIM thalamotomy is something that can be done in a relatively safe manner for essential tremor patients. And even pallidothalamic tractotomy, there is quite a good amount of evidence of bilateral treatments in Parkinson's disease. There have been a few studies published, and there is a clinical trial underway in Parkinson's disease. And also for dystonia, I think there were a couple of cases published with status dystonicus with bilateral GPI lesions. So do you think that we will ever go to bilateral lesions for dystonia? Well, do you plan to study bilateral pallidothalamic tractotomy in these patients?
Yeah, my personally speaking, I don't recommend the bilateral PTT lesion with focused ultrasound or radio frequency. I think that very severe hypophonia is likely to happen, and the dysarthria and the hypophonia is irreversible. And I think the effects of the PTT lesion on muscle tone looks very severe than the GPI or VO thalamus. So PTT lesion, because I think the location of the PTT is close to the midbrain, so many fiber passing through this area, other than the pallidothalamic tract, either cerebrothalamic tract, nigrothalamic tract, or pallidotegmental tract, or tegmental hypothalamic pathway, so many fibers passing through this area as a physophorale. So we could not target isolated pallidothalamic tractotomy lesion. So zonal inserter lesioning or other fiber lesioning included. So I don't recommend a bilateral PTT lesion because of the many fibers injured in this surgery. So bilateral semi-structural lesioning induce a very serious complication. So that's why I'm planning to stage asymmetrical bilateral lesioning for one side PDT, another side is SCN or VOI or VOA may work for cervical dystonia. It could be safe, but I think the bilateral VIM is a very safe, but it's totally different story. In PDT, bilaterally, I think it's a very risky surgery.
Okay, so you will not be the one who goes ahead with the clinical trial of bilateral PDT, right? Okay. Well, thank you very much, Shiro. This has been an incredibly insightful discussion. Before we wrap up, do you have any final takeaways for clinicians and researchers who are interested in focused ultrasound for treating movement disorders?
Yeah, thanks to the Focused Ultrasound Foundation, we conducted this clinical trial. I think this is a curable condition with deep brain stimulation or lateral frequency lesion or focused ultrasound ablation or botulinum toxin injections or all other medications, any kinds of the procedures we can treat, we can save the cervical dystonia patients. Yeah, we will focus on the complete resolution of cervical dystonia with any kinds of the procedure. And the focused ultrasound is one of the treatment options and with a less invasive and cutting edge and very safe procedure. So yeah, I will have a good hope for cervical dystonia treatment in the future.
Perfect. Well, thank you again, Shiro. Thank you for joining us today. It's exciting to see new advancements in incisionless neurofunctional treatment for dystonia, and we look forward to following your work in the future.
Yeah, thank you again for having me. It was great talking with you.
And that's it for today's episode of the MDS Podcast. If you enjoyed the discussion, don't forget to subscribe. You can find more episodes on our website or even on your regular podcast platforms. And you can find the article. I really recommend you to go look it up and read it because it has so much that we have just discussed here. And also the videos are really impressive. So you can find the article on the Movement Disorder Journal webpage. Thank you all for listening.
The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the International Parkinson and Movement Disorder Society or their affiliated journals, Movement Disorders, and Movement Disorders Clinical Practice. Any disclosures of the participants can be found within the episode description located on the MDS website.